Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I'm joined today by Kyle Dvorak from Roto World NBC Sports. We are going to continue our discussion of the rookies. Earlier in the week, Pat Corain joined us, and we did a pretty deep discussion about a lot of these rookies after the combine and how they're going to impact the dynasty fantasy football landscape. This is going to be a little bit more redraft focused, a little bit more 2024 focused. But Kyle, I mean, were you locked in? Were you like, anticipating Theo Johnson's 40 with bated breath? Is the NFL combine as a TV product working for you?
No, I didn't watch any of it. Actually, I think it is, as far as like, you can only make dudes like who play football in helmets and pads and hit each other a lot, running around doing drills that aren't like super correlated to what they're going to be doing on the field. And like in our testing of like the math of it, like mostly it just predicts draft capital for how low stakes it really should be. It do a good job of hyping it up. It like, there's no reason for us to really be watching this. We can just pull it up in the spreadsheet a few weeks later. And I didn't watch it, but like, a lot of people do watch it. Credit the NFL for making it a year-round sport for even like the dumbest of stuff. Not that the combine doesn't matter, but we certainly think it matters more than it does on the weekend of the combine.
Right.
But no, I didn't watch it. I just pulled the numbers up afterwards.
So it's to me, it sort of fails as a TV product because it's just a long day of watching dudes run, basically. You know, it's not that different than watching the Olympics or whatever, like watching the biathlon, where it's like, you get it. Like, I get it. This is very impressive, but I don't need to be locked in. It's a very good social media product, though, where
you are
able to immediately recap, you know, just whatever happened. And you know, one of the funniest things ever was this defensive tackle guy, or this Amarius Mims, where
good.
he hurts his hamstring. Everyone is reporting he hurts his hamstring running the 40, but then somehow some intern at the combine inputs the data in wrong, and everyone who 3 hours ago was like, oh, Amarius Mims hurt his hamstring, then sees a much smaller, like 290-pound lineman do the same drill. His times get inputted for Amarius Mims, who I think is like 6'6", 350 pounds. He's just like a mountain of a man. And so everyone for the next 10 hours is breathlessly tweeting about how we found the most athletic lineman.
Yeah, he had the best, one of the best short shuttles for a tackle ever. I think it was short shuttle, but I think it was one of the agility drills. One of the best, I'll say it's short shuttle for a tackle ever. And like you'd imagine the best short shuttle for a tackle comes from that smaller tackle, a 6'3", 280-pound guy who like, oh, it's great he ran the best short shuttle. He's got to put on 20 pounds. And for a few hours, it looked like the best short shuttle came from one of the biggest tackles ever. And it was incredible. So many good tweets come out. And then a few hours later, everyone is just crushed to find out, this guy, you know, pulled his hammy and it didn't show up for the rest of the day. And just some poor intern ruined everyone's day.
Absolutely, absolutely brutal. So I think this is a good place to begin. This is just sort of like what you do is you just ask people. It's like the weeks in between the conference championships and the Super Bowl where you're just like, so who you got? Who you got in the big game? Except the question is, who do you have between Drake May, McCarthy, and Jane Daniels as the second best quarterback in the class? Are you a Drake May bro? Are you a JJ McCarthy actually could have been a lot better had they needed him to be better? Truther, it doesn't matter that Jane Daniels was 23 and throwing to two first-round wide receivers. True, there are a lot of different ways it can go.
I'd say I don't know who. I assume JJ McCarthy has an agent at this point, but doing a good job just getting thrown into this conversation because I wouldn't. If I was asking you that question, I honestly just wouldn't have mentioned JJ McCarthy. Not that he's bad. I think he's probably deserving of the QB4, but honestly, I wouldn't have even asked you if he is in the conversation. Because he's not for me, not that he's a bad prospect, but like to me, in terms of real life and probably where I think they get drafted, I think Drake May is easily the second best. I think the gap between him and Caleb is probably not as far as other people think. I don't think he has a good shot. I don't think he has any shot at going one, but I think he's like reasonably in the same sort of tier of pure NFL talent as Caleb. Fantasy is a different story though. Like, give me the guy who is going to, for even from a clean pocket, give you 10 rushing yards on like 20% of his clean pocket plays, let alone pressured plays. But I do think, like you said, he's pretty old, late breakout. He did have a really solid year very early in his career and then had coaching overturn transfer. But give me the guy who has the prototypical throwing style, the prototypical deals with pressure well, but isn't afraid to make big plays on his own, versus the Jaden Daniels throwing to a bunch of first round picks, late breakout, and also just some concerns with his ability to handle pressure and his ability to throw in the face of pressure or throw it all. Like, so much of it, his game was just running in college. And also so much of that running results in him getting crushed. I think that can be coached out.
Crushed. So if you watch Jaden Daniels highlights, you are going to watch this dude getting squared up time after time by like linebackers. It just, and to his credit, you know, misses no time. His final season at LSU, I don't actually know if he was, you know, dealing with anything and playing through it, or if he felt great or whatever. My concern with Jaden Daniels would be the obvious one after just watching Anthony Richardson as a rookie, which is maybe you can get away with that style of running around and stuff in college where guys are a little bit smaller, a little bit slower. But like, when one of the 10 best linebackers in the world, 20 best linebackers in the world, is the guy who's squaring you up and chasing you down out of the pocket, I don't know how many times you can go through that collision as a pretty slight guy. Like, Jaden Daniels is not Anthony Richardson size. He is not Cam Newton size.
Yeah, Anthony Richardson got hurt doing this stuff after four games, and he is built like Cam freaking Newton. He is a tank. And Jaden is he's a string bean. He is thin.
He is. Now, I think Jaden Daniels' fantasy production as a rookie is going to be pretty tied to what team he goes to and how much of it is designed around his skill set. Obviously, the thing you would hope would be that the NFL has learned its lesson enough now that there's no more trying to square peg, round hole these young athletic quarterbacks, where basically the idea of drafting Justin Fields and turning him into Drew Brees, it's just like, I don't even know what team would do that. What team in the top 10 would even be so backwards thinking as to do that? But you say that, I say that out loud, and I'm like, we actually did just see this happen to Justin Fields. And it's happened every year of Fields' career. He gets a new coach, a new coordinator. They try and turn him into a pocket passer for half the season. They realize it doesn't work. They turn him loose, and then he goes nuts once they turn him loose. Obviously, the thing I'm saying is, what happens if Jaden Daniels goes to the Patriots and they just take him at three? How bad can it be? And I think it could be pretty bad.
I kind of feel a little less worried about landing spot with him, because every time he dropped backs, he's dropping his eyes and he's running a lot. He has one of the highest clean pocket scramble rates. It's either like first or second of the past 5 years. And he also has one of the highest rush yards per attempt on his scrambles of the past five or so years among quarterbacks. So he scrambles a lot, whether he needs to or not. Oftentimes he doesn't need to. And of course, he's a freaking absolute insane runner when he does scramble. So if they don't pass the football a lot, my guess is part of that comes from design runs. If they do pass the football a lot, you're just getting runs by the nature of his game out of those. So I think the only way he doesn't put up fantasy points is if his team doesn't choose to use him as a runner, but also chooses to run the football a lot. I kind of see the Patriots doing that, to be fair. They're like, we got to hide him behind a run game, but also not let him pass. But for the most part, he creates so much of his own production. His coach can scheme him a ton of production, but he wants to run when he drops back. So either you drop back a lot, that's a lot of rush attempts, or you run a lot. And I'd hope, if you're a team running a lot with Jaden Daniels, some of those runs, a lot of those runs, frankly, are going to be runs with Jaden Daniels. Whereas like Drake May, if he just lands the Patriots, they could just run the football a lot without him. Like, you're not designing a ton of runs for him. So I think it'd be, again, a better real life success for Drake May. But I do think Jaden Daniels is sort of insulated to the fantasy woes of a lot of other quarterbacks, because there's just almost no universe in which he doesn't run a lot, no matter how that comes, whether it's designed or it's his own doing on pass attempts or, you know, dropbacks.
What do you think happens to the three respective quarterbacks ADP? Caleb Williams is the quarterback 16. Jaden Daniels is the quarterback 18. May is the quarterback 21. If the first three picks go as chalk. So Bears take Caleb, Commanders take May, Jaden Daniels goes to the Patriots at three.
Yeah, May is like barely even chalk at two this point, though. I think he's down to like minus 120. He's still the favorite to go to the Commanders.
I bet it yesterday because it just feels insane. Like May is just better than Jaden Daniels.
I know. I see all of the, like, every 3 days, one of the NFL talking heads gets like, I'm hearing from scouts that they think, you know, Jaden's the number two or whatever. But like, I do struggle to see how an NFL franchise would pass on May when he's kind of the complete package of your prototypical NFL quarterback. I think Jaden should, with good coaching, crush in the NFL. Like, he's got such a good skill set, but there's like a much more thinner path to him crushing. We're like, I think May could just succeed in all.
I mean, Jaden Daniels didn't crush in college. Like, there's like a real sample of Jaden Daniels just not crushing in college, you know?
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
I think we probably get May rise. I think because May is presumed to be number two and Caleb is presumed to be number one, they probably both rise a little bit, because no matter what happens throughout the offseason, when something like modestly good, which for Caleb going first overall, that's probably good. And for May going second overall, it's probably good. Even if it's extremely expected, the market still loves to just double count just a little bit. I do think Jaden going to the Patriots wouldn't be great for his fantasy outlook. Cause like I said, I think he's insulated versus some of the fantasy woes of going to a bad team, because he just does so much of his fantasy production on his own. But like, Patriots would suck. If there's any team in the top 10, let alone top three, it would be my least favorite pick amongst them. I do think his ADP would fall, and maybe because I think he's pretty likely to go three, and I think the Patriots are pretty likely to take him, should be docking him a little bit in, like, when I'm working with Karain on our best ball ranking. So maybe I should dock him a little bit, because I do think he falls when he likely goes to the Patriots. Not that it's a guarantee, but I think it's likely. I think it's likely that he falls. So
what if McCarthy gets traded up for? Because right now McCarthy in the big board basically doesn't get drafted. I believe he is the quarterback 31. Now, it is a 20-round draft, so that means he gets drafted more often than he would in an 18-round draft. But I would guess he goes something like 50, 60% of the time, something like that. But I suppose the way I feel is Williams is going one, May is going two. I am not going to try and figure out what the Patriots are going to do at all, because I just don't have a read on what, like, is Kraft calling the shots? Is Jerod Mayo calling the shots? Like, well, it just feels kind of hard to parse out. But there's enough chatter about McCarthy that I do think a team, and he's the, you know, weirdly, he's kind of the type of guy I could see a GM being willing to get fired for in a way that maybe they would not have for Will Levis or something, where he's such the prototype. You know, obviously we got the, oh, he interviewed so well. Oh, he was the only stud quarterback who did the drills. Look, he's willing to do X, Y, and Z. Harbaugh vouched for him. He wins a national championship. All this stuff, where I actually could see the Raiders trading, you know, multiple things or whatever to go get him. Or the Falcons saying, you know what, we're not even going to be able to get McCarthy at eight. We got to trade up to three to go get him, or whatever it might be.
I do think a team could trade up for him. I still think it's unlikely they trade up to three for him. But I actually do think it's pretty reasonable that a team trades up for him, because the Giants are sitting there, very possible they're interested in McCarthy. I don't know, frankly, if they are.
Nah, they're sitting neighbors.
What, I believe it's six. And then the Falcons, if you're the Vikings, the Raiders, Broncos don't probably want to spend draft capital having just burned so much of it over the past few years. But if you're one of the teams in that range, you don't want to sit there and see if the Giants want to take him or see if the Falcons want to take him. Because if they think he's like even a top like 20 talent, like talent position agnostic in the draft, he plays quarterback, they're taking him at six or they're taking him at eight. So I do think we could see a team trade up to four or five to go and get him. I'd be pretty surprised if they trade up and take him over Jaden Daniels. So, but I do think like top five is very reasonable for him to go. I still think it's most likely he goes to, I think Falcons is probably the most likely outcome at eight, but even then Falcons most likely outcome could also mean Falcons trade up to get him. So I think he would kind of locked him in for probably top 10 at this point. I think even the teams that like think 11 and 12 are like Vikings, Broncos. If they want him, I think they almost have to move up to get him just to be certain that if they think a quarterback is a good talent, you can't just sit there and wait for him to fall to you.
I think that's probably right. I mean, I actually would love if J.J. McCarthy went to the Falcons at 8 or if they traded up to get him or whatever, yes. Because it's just, for fantasy, it's roughly the same thing as Kirk Cousins going there, where it immediately makes Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Bijan Robinson, like, such good bets, like, relatively speaking to what they have been.
Oh, yeah.
Where, like, right now, Pitts is the tight end 11 on underdog, or maybe the tight end 10. Drake London is, like, a mid-fourth-round pick, wide receiver 26, 27. And, you know, the base rate assumption from, like, even smart people are just like, I don't know if I can do Kyle Pitts and Drake London and Bijan Robinson. You know, people who should kind of know better, because that's how bad the quarterback play has been. And Raheem Morris said it. I mean, he said it out loud at the press conference, right? He goes,
"Yep."
He goes, if we had better quarterback play, I'm probably not here. Like, the Falcons could win that division next year with Kirk Cousins or with J.J. McCarthy being... If J.J. McCarthy could be the 16th best quarterback in the NFL next season, the Falcons 100%. Are making the playoffs like lock.
Yeah, man, like, we got to get even on Kyle Pitts. Like, his rookie year, I think he had like just a below average win rate in best ball because he scored one freaking touchdown despite posting, I think, the second most yards for a rookie tight end ever. And maligned by bad quarterback play. And this is the same is true of Drake London, especially last year. Maligned by bad quarterback play. Pitts injured. Probably didn't play his best football either, but like it does feel like to me still inherently very obvious that Drake London and Kyle Pitts and Bijan, although this doesn't quite need stated as much, and I guess we weren't as burned on him as we were on Pitts, or maybe we were, I don't know. But for the pass catchers, they do seem inherently very talented. I mean, I get that they've burned us badly the past 2 years, but last year, even the whole bet with them was not that like, oh, they're going to have good quarterback play and they're going to pass the ball a lot. It was like, if they don't get near league bottom quarterback play, and if they aren't one of the most run heavy teams in the past 5 to 10 years, they're probably small wins. It just turned out they did get nearly the worst quarterback play in the NFL. And they were one of the most run heavy teams in the NFL. But like, we bet against outlier outcomes last year because like, you should probably never pick a single team to be the most run-heavy team of the past 5 years.
Right.
We just picked that team last year, and I do think that they do seem like strong target earners, extreme athletes, like good football players that just need a guy. They don't need good quarterback play. They just need a guy.
They really don't. Yeah.
And so I do think J.J. McCarthy would probably be good for him, too. Like, I actually think he'd be a pretty decent fantasy option because he's almost – maybe they give, like, a ceremonious start or two to one of the backups they have – but it's a really good spot for him to start 15-plus games. Whereas the Giants, one, their weapons are terrible. You know, their de facto number one receiver, Darren Waller, apparently isn't retiring and then immediately refuted that report. Great stuff. I love to see that for my 32-year-old tight end who hasn't been good in 4 years. So that's both a bad landing. Offensive line's also terrible in New York. So that's a bad landing spot from games played and fantasy production. But I think that's the only one that in terms of McCarthy being a redraft option, especially when you're talking about best ball, where you can at least hold his like non-starting weeks for like 2 or 3 weeks. I think the Giants are the only really bad one at this point. If he goes to the Raiders, Aiden O'Connell gets 3 ceremonious starts and is benched.
Like, not even, honestly.
Yeah. Like, oh no, exactly. Yeah. 3 is like, I missed out in the first 3 weeks, but you're not, I don't think if the Vikings, like maybe the Vikings sign Brissett and then get J.J. McCarthy or whatever. They sign a good backup quarterback. Raiders, if the Broncos somehow get him,
the Vikings should just run Nick Mullins out for 17 weeks. I think Nick Mullins
could
break.
I mean, we all love that.
Nick Mullins could break the NFL single season passing yardage record in that KOC offense because no one has ever cared less about a throw resulting in a turnover than Nick Mullins. I mean, he really, it was inspiring to watch, truly.
It was so good for a group of fantasy guys who haven't seen Jameis Winston like level play in years, because Jameis Winston hasn't started, I don't think, in 2 or 3 years.
Right.
We missed that. We needed that kind of guy. Or like Ryan Fitzpatrick, who also played on the Bucs, ironically. Like, man, the gunslinger lunatic. I guess Joe Flacco kind of fit that bill this year, too. The gunslinger lunatic is such a good archetype. We really missed that. But I like... Vikings sign a backup. McCarthy sits behind him for two games. Jared Stidham holds him off for two quarters. Daniel Jones is the only quarterback who he's good enough. Like, I don't know if he is good enough. The team's invested enough in Daniel Jones that
right.
I think he could hold off with a few decent games and a few wins. He could hold off McCarthy for like eight games. And even in best ball, like, I get that the last weeks matter, but eight games of a truly dead roster spot of like guaranteed zeros, that's probably a loss. You probably don't even want to be taking that guy as quarterback 31. But at this point, that's the only team I feel bad about McCarthy landing on in terms of just purely games played.
So it's pretty interesting that, like, basically every report on the Giants says something different. Like, one report will say they're going to bring in a vet and they're going to draft a kid. Like, maybe the kid is Penix, or maybe the kid is Nix, or maybe the kid is Spencer Rattler instead of spending that sixth overall pick. I think, and the Giants thing comes down to what is organizationally the better decision. You bring in Jaden Daniels or JJ McCarthy with the sixth overall pick, or you trade up for the third or whatever, and you do that where they don't have a real wide receiver one, or you run back Daniel Jones, who did have one winning season where he was capable of playing winning football, with a real wide receiver one. I mean, you're probably more likely to win 10 games with that combination, honestly, than sticking a 21 for JJ, like, I don't know, 28 and a half if you're Jaden Daniels as your rookie year, throwing to the corpse of Darren Waller. And just everyone on the team is a slot wide receiver, other than Slayton, really, is the issue.
Yeah, I mean, for 2024, for sure, sticking with Daniel Jones luck, or, you know, it projects them for more wins, because the average, even in a, let's say it's a good class, the QB3 or QB4 in any given class probably just on average turns out to be like the 26th best quarterback in the NFL. Right. Whereas Daniel Jones is probably like the 24th or 30th. He's probably a little better. But then you also get to spend that pick to add Malik Nabers or whatever. So Malik Nabers, plus even just call it a wash in quarterback play, is better for 2024. But they can pretty easily get out of his contract next year. I think they hit like a $19 million dead cap hit, which, like, in terms of the grand scope of the NFL, it's not that bad, especially for a quarterback who you don't want to have on your roster. We assume so next year. And they save like $20 million too. So, I mean, you would be taking this guy to prep him for next year, but man, you'd be throwing in such a bad situation. I do think, like, they're probably better off banking on either Daniel Jones turning it around. You add Malik Nabers. Like, Daniel Jones' wide receivers and offensive line have been pretty terrible throughout his career. And he was even, I think, 2 years ago, like 11th or 12th in EPA per play, because he stopped making so many bad mistakes and he still runs a bit. It's like, maybe he turns into a decent quarterback, but really the good outcome is probably you draft Malik Nabers. Nabers looks good. You try and beef up the offensive line in the second or third round, and Daniel Jones still sucks, and you get a top three pick next year, and then you cut Daniel Jones. In terms of the long-term outlook, that is probably the best decision, I think, because the roster is so bad right now that do you really want to drop the fourth or third best quarterback into this bad situation when you can just probably be bad for one more year? And I think this regime could survive that, especially because, like, I don't know, I guess Daniel Jones' contract is very bad, but they did structure in a way to get out of it next year, which is good right on them. So I think they could survive into next year. And I think that would be the best long-term sort of decision for them.
Yeah. Okay. Let's change track to the running backs now. Maybe we don't have to so much discuss which ones, although obviously we can, but what backfields are most poised to be really significantly shaken up by the addition of, like, a high ceiling running back, or even eligible for three downs? I think obviously the Ravens is one. You know, their highest drafted running back who is on the roster, Keaton Mitchell, is returning from a torn ACL. And then Justice Hill and Gus Edwards are not under contract. So it's a, and they obviously run the air out of the ball. I think the Cowboys, because the Cowboys, it's rumored for them, obviously, like, oh, Jerry Jones, he wants the big name. He wants Saquon. He wants Derrick Henry, whoever. But Cowboys' cap situation is not good. In fact, it's quite bad. And they would be much better off with Rico Dowdle, Deuce Vaughn, and some guy who weighs 227 pounds, coming in.
I mean, it's probably not that expensive to bring back Tony Pollard, given what he did last year. Like, he didn't help his market value at all, but like,
no,
he got better in the second half of the year and was coming off of a really bad injury in January. Like, maybe there's some room for optimism. I want to say in Matthew Berry's stuff he heard at the Combine article, maybe this is where it's from. There's maybe some interest in bringing him back as well. So like, it would be way more financially prudent, like you said, to go cheap at running back, even if it's not dirt cheap, Deuce Vaughn, Malik Davis, and it's Tony Pollard on a still would be a relatively cheap deal. That's probably their best outcome. But I guess maybe like the second best outcome is to just draft a fourth round running back and just call it a day there. Like, find a relatively sizable running back we can pair with Deuce Vaughn or whatever and call it a day. The worst outcome in terms of like what is probably optimal strategy is absolutely like Saquon Barkley. I mean, it's easy to, I was like, oh, it put me on the spot here with all the running back landing spots. And I was like, oh, just think of all the running backs who didn't get franchise tagged or extended because they're vacating so much volume. I think the Chargers is probably the best. I think they're going to be a good team. I think they're probably like a 9-win team. Yeah. That wants to run the air out of the ball, which is perfect. That's the Lions setup. Imagine if the Lions running backs were both one guy, they'd be like Christian McCaffrey plus level of fantasy production.
Right.
They just split the running back touches relatively evenly. If there's only one guy in the Chargers backfield, he would see the ball so much, but I don't think they're going to be losing a ton of games. Like, there's obviously teams that run the ball a lot and they lose games. Like, think about the Falcons. They run the ball a lot, but I don't care about their fantasy running backs because Bijan got like 3 goal line touches all year and they still split their backfield. But even if they didn't, there's no goal line touches to go around. I think the Chargers are probably going to be a winning team that wants to run the ball. And that is a great setup for a running back. And they can pass the ball efficiently when they want to. It just won't be as often as we'd like. Chargers are a great spot. I think the Raiders are primed to add a running back. I wouldn't call it a great spot, but I mean, touches are touches and Zamir White is probably not that big of a roadblock, especially with regime changeover
regime
and
change.
Even the previous regime only invested, was it like a fourth or fifth round
fourth
pick
round.
In him? So
yeah. So it's very much it is what it is with Zamir White. I think like it would depend on the style of guy they drafted there with him. Let's say Dylan Lobb is a sixth round pick to the Raiders, maybe you don't get that enthused about it because they would probably view him more as the, I mean, I'll just we'll say the line Bart, the Rex Burkhead, the compliment there, the goal line third down guy. But if they take a Guerrero, a Braylon Allen, just one of these bigger bodied, clear straight line runner guys, then it would be a little bit concerning. I think obviously it feels like the market has just decided the Chargers are taking Blake Corum. Right now on the DraftKings Sportsbook, I've never seen a line like this for a fourth round pick running back.
But
the line for Blake Corum on DraftKings to be drafted by the Chargers is like plus 140, which is, I mean, it is pretty goddamn funny that the
look,
market
if you're trying
decided
to make sure your account doesn't get limited for like 2 years, bet $100 on Blake Corum to go to the Chargers. Immediately DraftKings is like, all right, we never have to limit this guy
and
again.
You might win. And he still might win. It's a fish bet and you still might win. Because Corum didn't have a good combine. In fact, he had a pretty bad combine. I guess he didn't have a bad combine. He was fine in the agility drills.
He was really good in the agility. That was one thing that stuck out to me. I mean, he came in just like just under 5'8", just really small. Not a lot of running backs look like that. And 205, which I think 200 and something, it's low two O's.
Yeah.
So like not a terrible BMI, but at that small, like it's not a great size. And he didn't, North Carolina had Underdog's like parlay stuff closed down right before the combine.
Right.
I saw the Blake Corum line open at like 439 and 44 flat. And anyone who knows anything about college football was like, this is the easiest over you've ever bet in your life. Just absolutely hammer this. And he ran like a 4.5 something, which at his size, again, like if you're going to be small, you better be really freaking fast. And he's not at all. But his agility stuff is really good. And for guys who get good draft capital and really crush the agility drills, it's a pretty good cohort of guys. I still think his combine was a net negative, but like he did save it. He did help save an otherwise disappointing weekend with really good agility drills.
He also wasn't that good his final season at Michigan. Well, I guess depending on who you ask, he was very good the prior year at Michigan, suffered a pretty bad injury. I don't even remember what the injury was, but came back and was just relatively inefficient. I am hoping that Braylon Allen goes to one of these teams that clearly wants an early down grinder and would create a real separation in roles. So like Braylon Allen goes to the Ravens, huge win. Braylon Allen goes to the Titans with Tajay Spears, huge win. I'm wondering, this is obviously, people don't want to do this on a fantasy football podcast because it is heresy to admit that you're not Nick Chubb's biggest fan. But the Browns should definitely be in the market for maybe even multiple running backs, because the only way, their only path to winning and being efficient on offense is being insanely good at running the ball, because they have this albatross at quarterback. I would be stunned if Nick Chubb does not start the year on the physically unable to perform list. We're talking.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, his injury was devastating. So I think he came away with like multi-ligament damage, and that was considered a win that he didn't like absolutely destroy everything. It was like, you know, torn MCL, torn ACL, and like, I don't know, maybe a dislocation or something. And the fact that they didn't have to amputate his leg was like, well, I watched it, so that's actually a pretty big win. I'd be stunned if he starts if he's available for week one or even 2, 3, or 4. Like, I think he's on the PUP list for the first 4 weeks. And they probably also have to rework his contract. He's making a lot of money, and it
given
the amount of money they have tied to a terrible quarterback, probably can't afford to be spending a ton of money on running back. And I think they can easily get out of his contract. I'd be shocked if they actually do that. I almost certainly think they're going to tell him, like, you can make some of this back in incentives, we're still keeping you around. But like, they're going to rework his contract, and they're only going to have Jerome Ford for the first few weeks. I could see them taking a fourth round running back that like someone falls to the fourth round, and we start to get really excited about this player.
Yeah, and I mean, look, Jerome Ford was a good pass-catching running back for them last year. He was not efficient running the ball at all, like anti-efficient. And he also makes, like, I mean, this is a dude who is making no money. He makes less than $1 million a year on the Browns roster. Like, you don't need to be going into the season, like, trying to protect Jerome Ford's feelings. I mean, I could see them being a Jonathan Brooks team. I could see them being a Trey Benson team. There's obviously,
I wonder if they wouldn't be a Jonathan Brooks team specifically because they're both, him and Nick Chubb are both going to miss
Brooks
the first 4 weeks of the season. It's short, short-sighted thinking, but I guess you can also kind of be short-sighted with running backs since we only care about
them
for the first like 3.5 years of their career. So I would get why you could be
short-sighted. Four games will be like 10% of his, of whatever running back Cleveland Browns career. So I don't even think it is that short-sighted. That actually maybe would be a spot for one of these pass catching running backs in the class, actually, would be like, maybe we want an upgrade or something on Jerome Ford. I did want to mention Tyrone Tracy. We both looked at him. Sam Sherman flagged him up for me the other day. He's like this really interesting guy who converted from wide receiver to running back, transferred from Iowa to Purdue. He's like an insanely good kick returner as well, which like translates pretty well. He's not even in the underdog pool right now. I am very much hoping that this dude gets drafted in the sixth round to a good team, because that is the type of guy who like is getting there some weeks on like 11 touches. You spend like $19 on him in the main event in week 5 after the running back ahead of him goes down. I'm pretty into Tyrone Tracy, who was one of the big combine winners. He was awesome at the combine.
Yeah, he crushed the combine. He has decent size, and we expect, like, he's obviously going to have good pass-catching chops. Yeah, he was literally a full-time, he didn't play a ton at receiver. Like, he didn't get a ton of playing time, but he was exclusively a wide receiver for 5 of his 6 years in college. Like you said, he transferred to another school and still spent the first year at that school playing wide receiver. And it's not like he was he didn't do a ton at wide receiver, but he did have over 500 yards his second year. It was like not far off from a good breakout season his second year at Iowa, like a legitimately functional college wide receiver who then also turns out to be a very functional college running back. I comp him somewhere between like Tajay Spears and Darrington Evans, of like good utility for a team to be able to catch passes, but also he's probably not big enough to handle a 3-down workload and has no real experience handling a 3-down workload, but could come in, play on special teams, be the third down back, and do some damage on first and second down. I totally hope he finds a landing spot, sort of like Jaleel McLaughlin or Keaton Mitchell, where like, I don't expect him to be the guy, but can he carve out a role right away and be explosive on that role? I think he can, and I hope this combine gets NFL teams to evaluate him that way.
So you hit the nail on the head, which is why it's worth talking about these guys with like very little production or just like weird profiles or whatever, because Pete Mitchell and Jaleel McLaughlin were like one ankle turn away last year from being like straight up league winners. Like Javonte Williams turns his ankle in week 13, and you've been stashing McLaughlin the entire time. You were about to be getting like 19 touches per game on an offense that like just wanted to give the ball to the running back. Like Keaton Mitchell actually was just straight up going to be a league winner, and then he tore his knee. But like he
Yep.
just
He didn't
like
even need the. Well, I guess he got the injury with J.K. Dobbins, but he'd already gotten it. We were clearly league winner path and just bad injury luck for him.
Now the two spots where I am gonna be like immediately sirens in my head are gonna start going off if they take a running back. One, the Chiefs, because this is their running back depth chart right now. Isaiah Pacheco. That's it. He's the only guy who's under contract. He's McKinnon, not under contract. Clyde. They did not, shockingly, they did not pick up Clyde's fifth year option. I think Denaric Prince might be on the practice squad,
I was
but
going to say they might have like some a reserve slash future
I
contract,
think
but yeah.
that's what it is. I think it's reserves slash future. So obviously Pacheco was so good for them last year, but this is not a team that gets sanctimonious or sentimental about their running back situation. Like if they find some guy in the fourth rounder they think is better, and he's on the team next year and he plays better, or just a pass catching guy, just a guy to fill
I was
in
going to say
the
we
McKinnon
just talked
role.
about like the man we talked about Tyrone Tracy like. They probably would love to have someone fill in the Jerick McKinnon role because that role is so efficient for them and fits with what they want to do, especially think about in the red zone, like having a utility back in the red zone for a team that has the highest red zone pass rate, the highest pass rate inside the five, having a guy who can do everything and doesn't like the one thing he doesn't have to do is bowl over guys at 10 men in the box, nose down, because like they don't do that stuff. They do the dumbest, weirdest stuff at the goal line. And like McKinnon was really good in those situations because he's super versatile, but like he's old, was hurt for most of last year. I do think they're like a great team to add a more like versatile and doesn't have to be a first and second down player, which actually be great for Tracy.
Yes, because they already have that guy. Now the other team is, and look, we've done this many times over the last several years, but the Cincinnati Bengals, they are a team obviously that values running backs like pretty heavily, but they always take one. We've done this with Chase Brown, we did this with Trevion Williams, we did this with Chris Evans, we used to do this with Samaje Perine. A lot of guys backing up Joe Mixon. I don't know cap wise how they can pay Joe Mixon the number that he is being paid right now. Now maybe they'll figure it out. He'll restructure. Like I don't know. But as it sits now, no way can Joe Mixon, I think it's $8.5 million is what he's owed against the cap this year. I don't see any way he can play for the Bengals on that number. So I would be interested in them both ways. So if they take a pass catching back, it probably means that Mixon is coming back to in some degree, and that they don't want to go all in on Chase Brown. Or if they take a Yorendo, Isaiah Davis, Ray Davis, whoever, a 230-pound guy, it probably means they feel pretty good about what Chase Brown was doing at the end of last season, but they don't want him to be a 19 touch per game guy. But either way, I'm going to be paying very close attention to what the Bengals do in the backfield.
Yeah, Bengals will be a great landing spot for any team, assuming Joe Mixon isn't there. But even like honestly, Joe Mixon would probably provide great cover for us to get this hypothetical back many picks later in our dynasty drafts. Because
Right.
like Joe Mixon ain't long for this team, even if they bring him back this year, which I kind of actually get the inclination they will, probably just on a pay cut, frankly. I think he took a
Well,
pay cut
he's
last year. Like
8.8 million right now, but he can be cut for 2.7 dead. So saving a lot of money getting rid of him.
I think they probably just have him take a pay cut.
Yeah.
And like they also have the option of trading T. Higgins, which opens up some cap space because he's franchise tagged and also opens up the future of them. The Joe Burrow contract doesn't really kick in until next year. And then Ja'Marr Chase is going to start making a lot of money. So maybe they trade T and just a byproduct, not the goal of it, but a byproduct is they have a little bit more money this year. I just think, frankly, though, Joe Mixon just probably takes a pay cut. Probably the most likely outcome. He wants to be there. It's going to be the place he finds the most success in the NFL will be there. And he'll probably still, even at taking a pay cut, make similar to money to what he would find on the open market because it's a pretty deep running back class of free agents. He's going to be like the sixth or seventh most coveted free agent at best. So I think he stays there. And if they cut him, they do have to make like a meaningful investment at running back, which probably wouldn't happen through free agency because they would have just. Spent or just opted not to spend money too much money, but opted not to spend money. So then they kind of locked themselves into having to draft a running back. Not that that's the end of the world, but like it does sort of force you on a specific path. It reduces your team's like versatility. So I think he stays, and I actually think it's perfectly fine if they draft a running back, especially if they draft a running back with like third round draft capital, a running back that clearly has long-term value and investment from the team. Because like I said, I don't think Joe Mixon's long for this world. All of his efficiency measures are dropping. I think the thing he does best that they like is that he does a bunch of things at an okay level. He knows the system.
He can just play 75% of the snaps. He can just be out there. Yeah, they don't have to specialize at all. I'd be pretty into Jalen Wright going to either of these aforementioned teams where it's like, you know, he doesn't need to be the early down guy right away. But if he is, you know, if he shows up and is better than they think, or flashes really, Jalen Wright could totally be the Keaton Mitchell this year, where he shows up, he's buried on a depth chart, he's a fifth round pick or whatever, and then, you know, it's week 7 and everyone's like, oh dude, we got it, like this has got it, this guy's got to be on our teams, like we can't leave this guy on waivers.
Oh, I think Wright's pretty likely to go day 2. Like I think he's probably viewed as the third or fourth best running back, and we won't see running backs come off the board until probably like middle of the second round. We're not getting a top 40, I don't think, running back, but
Trey Benson will be like the 52nd pick or something, I bet.
Yeah, I think late 40s, early 50s is where we can start seeing running backs come off the board. But I do think Jalen Wright's got I think he's the third best running back in the class. I don't see an argument for many people over him. I mean, like maybe you look back at Blake Corum's previous season, say like, oh, the injury, he's going to get better. And he was really good previously. He just wasn't good in his final year. It wasn't great in his final year. It wasn't terrible. But then the size, you're like, do you want to take a guy who's coming off of his worst season because of injury and isn't great size, probably doesn't profile to play 3 downs, wasn't a notable pass catcher, wasn't terrible, it wasn't a notable pass catcher, or do you want to take Jalen Wright, who's super explosive, like, and he tested extremely well at the combine, and he has good size, like potential 3 down size maybe. I just don't see a strong argument for a ton of really anyone other than him as the RB3. And I think the third running back goes on day 2 of the draft. So I think he goes maybe higher than you were talking about. And he crushed for the Bengals. Cause I do think he's a guy who maybe he doesn't, cause he didn't do like, he wasn't a monster workload. He wasn't a big workload at all in college, but every time he steps on the field, his efficiency numbers or watching him tells you he probably should push his workload until you find out when the efficiency drop off is, then stop there. But he should have probably gotten more work. So if he goes to a bank and early in the season, he's only getting 8 or 9 carries, he's probably flashing a lot on those carries, but then he has the size and the talent discrepancy between him and Joe Mixon and him and a lot of veteran running backs to take over the backfield quickly.
I agree with that. What's your Braylon Allen take? I am more enamored with him than Corain is, honestly, more than anyone else is, but you just show me any 240-pound 19-year-old who converted from safety and ran for 1,500 yards as a 17-year-old in the Big Ten. I honestly don't care about anything else. I like, literally, those are the only facts that I need to know, and I am buying based on that.
I don't think the NFL, I don't think he goes day 2, and at which point, like, he's a player, I guess this is probably true of a lot of running backs. I'm kind of willing to just, whatever the NFL tells me they think of him is what I'm going to think of him, because it's such a team investment and team utilization driven position. Whereas like wide receiver, I'm like, I don't know, this guy seems pretty talented. I think the NFL missed. At running back, like, even if the NFL did miss on talent, which like obviously does exist at running back, if they don't think they missed and they don't let him get the ball, it will not matter. Whereas you can be your team's third or fourth wide receiver and be really efficient and work your way into a larger role. I don't think Braylon Allen goes day 2. I don't think he'll probably come in more than like, if he gets good, like fourth round draft capital is like the 5th or 6th best running back. But we'll say, as far as the combine goes, like, no Jonathan Brooks testing, Audric Estime falls out of the top 5 conversation and like, lucky to get in the top 12 conversation with the 4.740. So Braylon Allen at least like made a little headway there.
Really, I think you're right. That is the, you know, this is the whole thing with fantasy, is that you're right. You're definitely going to be right on average to like not take stances on running back talent. Like, you know, outside of very special cases, like Devin Achane, great example last year, like you taking a stance on him as a talent would have won I can't even really remember who the rookie running backs were last year off the top of my head, but I'm sure there would have been plenty of guys who were taking stances on the 2023 class of rookie running backs would have just gotten you annihilated. You would have just taken giant, because that's just the way it works, right? There are only so many opportunities available. Guys have to be more multifaceted than in years past or whatever, but that's just, he's only 19, man. He's Jason Tatum. Like, I can't escape that. All right, in terms of guys we are hoping that even just get drafted as opposed to being undrafted free agents, Dylan Lobb obviously is one of them for me. And what about Kamani Vidal? That was the other guy who really popped for me after the comp. He's really short though.
Yeah, I like you said, I don't I mean I think after the combine he probably gets drafted,
Yeah.
but yeah, we hope he gets drafted, but I do think like these sixth, seventh round guys, like especially I'll probably just take shots on someone like I guess he probably goes drafted earlier, Isaac Garendo, who he was a guy who like going into the I literally didn't know who he was going into the combine. He's like truly a backup at Louisville. And he goes out and is just the biggest strong, like the biggest, fastest running back we've seen, like almost ever. He ran like a mid 4.3s at 221. The group of guys that did that was Nile Davis, Jonathan Taylor,
Oh my
Antonio
God,
Gibson.
Nile Davis, my goat, my
Oh,
absolute goat. Yeah, I miss him every day.
he was like super buzzy when I very, very first got into Dynasty, like in high school. The first Dynasty league I ever had was like, this guy is the next coming. And he wasn't. And to be fair, like Garendo, not great college production, like truly backup, but he also graded out pretty well, really well as a pass catcher, both in PFF receiving grade and yards per route run, and was efficient on the ground. So like for me, I think he probably best fits the bill of like, if I don't think we'd be lucky to get like fourth round draft capital. I still don't think he goes day two, but a team's probably going to see that size speed and take him in the fourth or fifth round. And the moment the starter goes down there, we're going to go nuts at a guy who can catch passes and is 221 pounds and runs a 4.3 something. So it's probably my favorite guy who goes almost certainly on day three of the draft.
I mean, he like basically did not play in college, which is,
He was just truly a backup. He was truly a backup.
but it's knowing what we know about running back skill and production, it's honestly, it's hard to hold that against them. It like what I find with evaluating rookies is the thing that will give you signal that the NFL or your other drafters will ignore are, generally speaking, small school group of like FCS, double division two, group of five schools where the guy's handling like 90% of the backfield, where it's like this dude is getting 28 touches a game, never missing time, scoring half the team's touchdowns, but he ends up being a sixth round pick. There's a lot of reasons why, one being the NFL is just going to be biased towards power five school. It's a very simple heuristic, which is that's the highest level of college football, so these guys are probably more likely to be good NFL players. But you will find historically a lot of hits from that bucket of guys, like hyper productive smaller school players.
I mean, we just talked about Keaton, who went to ECU, and Jaleel, who was FCS or D2 player, I believe.
FCS all time, it was FCS all time leading college football rusher.
Yep.
And he undrafted, right? I mean, it's kind of crazy, right? To be
And
the
a lot of these small, like these smaller backs, I think they specifically go undrafted or just don't get good draft capital because
because they're
they're
small.
small players out of small schools. But you're like, yeah, like, oh, he's 5'8 and he's 202, and he had 300 carries in college. Like these types of backs, I do think are probably pretty strong bets when they check those boxes of like, oh, they're not subpar athletes, and they saw a ton of work in college, and they were good on that work. They weren't just seeing work, are probably pretty good bets.
Correct. Yeah. And but don't get me wrong, you also get hits out of the other bucket, the hyper athletic guy who didn't produce at all. Those guys probably are less likely to make rosters, though. At the end of the day, is what happens. That bucket of guys will like get drafted and get cut pretty frequently. It's why I was not really in on Isaiah Pacheco, because I was like, I've fallen for this type style of guy with the Chiefs before. Nyle Davis was a Chief, you know? I've done this experiment before. Obviously, the thing that obfuscated Pacheco is that his team was truly that bad. Like, the worst group of five school, which is a hard situation to succeed in. All right, let's do wide receivers now. I moved A.D. Mitchell up, way up, both in my best ball rankings and in my rookie rankings. I actually think it would not be insane if an NFL team took him ahead of Brian Thomas Jr. at this point. I mean, Thomas Jr. should still be ahead, but man, A.D. Mitchell has got like he the boxes that need to be checked. They're kind of all checked for me.
Yeah, I was kind of skeptical coming into the combine with him, but he is like 30. I don't know if he redshirted, but I believe he's third year breakout, like third true breakout to 30% dominator out of a power five school, like good size. Now it turns out great athlete. Like, yeah, I would love, you know, we all have a good freshman breakout, but like true breakout as a true, I think a true junior at a power five school with strong athleticism, not strong, like some of the best athleticism at the combine. I really couldn't, I would still take Brian Thomas over too, but I wouldn't hate it if a team took A.D. Mitchell over him. Cause like there are red flags in both profiles, but like the target earning ability of Brian Thomas just wasn't there. He's super efficient on a per target basis. And he has a reason he was playing from league neighbors, but like targets per out run, he struggled. Like he's not going, I don't know if at the NFL level, he'll be like a true alpha number one, or if he'll just be a super high impact 1B. And when you can say that about a player, yeah, it's probably fine to take A.D. Mitchell over him. I wouldn't do it, but like I can hear the argument for it. And I think A.D. almost locked himself into the first round. I think he probably got himself 70% likely to go in the first round, whereas before I thought he was well under a 50-50 to go in the first round.
Well, it helped that his teammate was so good at the combine too, right?
I made this point to Karain. They both get to benefit from the fact that like you look across the field and they're both great. You're like, oh, you weren't playing with just a guy. You were playing with what is probably now another first round pick. Worthy probably is maybe 60-40 to go in the first round, but if not, he's a high second round pick. Oh, you were playing with the fastest guy in the history of football and you still put up numbers. Also a feather in A.D. Mitchell's cap and vice versa for Worthy.
And Chetavian Sanders is probably going to be a top 80-ish pick. Jonathan Brooks is going to be a top 75-ish pick, probably, you know, and Jordan Whittingham, the third wide receiver, is going to get drafted too. Like, I mean, he's probably going to be a day three pick, but it's not like playing with a former insurance salesman. Quinn Ewers, a big, this is a popular take, but big loser of the 2024 combine is Quinn Ewers, who is throwing
I didn't think about that. That's definitely
a bunch
true.
Of a bunch of monsters. Now, I am a noted short king enthusiast, so I am not worried about Xavier Worthy weighing 165 pounds. I actually think it might end up working out specifically for fantasy football buyers, which is that the market will do this every so often. They did it with Van Jefferson. They did it with Tutu Atwell. Funny enough, they played for the same team where these guys are like second round picks or whatever. And the market just said, like, actually, I think they stink, you know? Van Jefferson, I remember his rookie season. He was a second round pick and a fourth round rookie pick. Now, obviously, the haters win that one, that, you know. But if you were to do that again, and if, let's say, Xavier Worthy is the 18th pick or whatever, 24th pick, theoretically, and the landing spot is kind of neutral, I could still see drafters taking Troy Franklin, Mitchell, maybe even Keon Coleman, depending on Keon Coleman's landing spot. Coleman had a terrible combine, but he is one of these guys who could maybe get higher draft. Like, people will discount him, I think, because he is so small.
Oh, yeah, he'll definitely get discounted. I mean, I was going to discount him because he was really small. There really aren't any successful receivers, you know, in sort of the annals of NFL history that look like a whole. He made it a whole 12 games before his little body crumpled.
He broke his leg run blocking. Like, it was insane for him to even be there. But yes,
a receiver you can't put on the field on running downs. We do love to see that. Totally. Tank Dell is a hit. He's 100% a hit. But I am saying, the guy who is super tiny, not nearly the size of any other NFL player, immediately got hurt on a play that is like 50% of NFL plays. Not my favorite. I love Tank Dell, and we're still buying him. But there really aren't a lot of successes that look like him. Like Marquise Brown comes in with size, not super successful. I believe Don Smith came in at 170 on the dot. But on the other hand, a lot of this stuff is like the NFL does a decent job filtering which small guys we like and which small guys we don't. If you come in at 165 and they take you in the fifth round, they recognize that you probably are not an NFL adequate size and talent combo. If they take you in the first round, they're telling us we don't think the size is an issue. So we can probably just cross it out, say, okay, size is an issue. Let's just evaluate him on the merits of his profile. Morthy has an elite profile, like year one, true 30% plus dominator
true
breakout. Really strong early career production. And then like, maybe there's a Quinn Ewers thing, but like his ADOT like declines through his third year. And it turns out you don't want to have a 10 ADOT for a guy who runs a freaking 4.21 and like a 17 ADOT as a true freshman. And it was probably his best year. So I think like the usage was a little wonky, and I'm willing to write off what is ultimately like a decline in production over his career, especially efficiency wise. I'm willing to write that off because the NFL seems perfectly fine saying, we don't care he's 165. We don't care too much about the late career. That was terrible, but it just didn't live up to building from his true freshman year. I'm willing to write those off because we know how good he was early in his career. We know how fast he is now. Yeah, I still think he probably doesn't come off the board until like the mid-20s, but that'd be fine. And there are really good teams in the mid-20s, obviously.
Yes. Those are really my only, like, I think that's my only take that is kind of devoid from the market. Well, and I just, like, I will end up with no Keon Coleman in any of these
probably
formats.
Not.
I just, the Keon Coleman, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, Quentin Johnston, Justin Hunter vibes are just getting, the drumbeat of Derek Rogers is just getting too loud for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, he didn't have, like, quote, a bad combine. I think he had, like, a 9-1 RAS or something. But, like, the thing is, the whole pitch with him is that he is this, like, mind-bendingly good athlete. I mean, he literally did play D1 basketball as a freshman after the college football season. He didn't play a ton, but, like, basketball athletes.
Yeah, he played, like, 7
good.
Minutes a game for, like, a pretty good Michigan State team under, what's, Tom Izzo? Yeah.
Yeah, that, oh, probably. I don't know for sure, but, like, he like that should be like a 9-9 RAS extreme guy. And you need to be a like not just a top like 10th percentile athlete. You need to be a top like first percentile athlete when every scout unanimously agrees, like not great footwork, doesn't like run routes with nuance, isn't getting a ton of separation. Okay, you can be that guy if you prove you're one of the best athletes out there. Then he runs like a 4.6, but it is as size is fine in a vacuum, but it's not fine when we know he can't get separation. Now I don't think physically, even if he's a better route runner, he can get separation because he's just not that fast, you know, pure speed. So yeah, as far as like guys who did really well at a high level at the combine, like as far as guys who, I think he did get like a 9-1 RAS maybe, probably the worst 9-1 RAS, the most disappointing 9-1 RAS I've ever seen, just because he needed to be better than that. He needed to overcome his lack of like nuance at the wide receiver position. I will say, to his credit, he had the fastest miles per hour in the gauntlet.
I mean, that I think you would find some people who would argue that's pretty important, maybe even more important than
I know.
Otherwise.
It probably, yeah. Honestly, it probably is the fact that doing football drills, he was the fastest as opposed to just running in a straight line. It probably does matter more, but like, I do just struggle to see a guy who, as a prospect, I already wasn't in on and didn't wow me at the combine. If I'm below market on my feelings for him before, combine didn't move me ahead. Like, I don't think it was a disaster, but it wasn't enough to bring someone like me on board.
I'm trying to, I don't know if you're having this experience with this rookie class, but I'm trying to be like, what is going to be the nugget when we look back, the statistical or data-backed nugget that is like the, well, Puka Nacua from the outset didn't look that impressive, but his targets and yards per route run was like unbelievable, like actually insane, like top 98th percentile of like the last like 5 years or something. So as we go through this, I'm just like, well, one of these guys obviously is going to surprise us. I mean, obviously not to the Nacua level, because that means like the greatest rookie wide receiver season of all time. Probably not going to happen again. But yep. One of these guys, you know, Roman Wilson is going to have like 100 catches or something and go Eddie Royal, or Ricky Pearsall is like going to be the second leading wide receiver on the something like that is going to happen. And maybe that'll be the thing. Maybe it will be the fastest gauntlet drill wide receiver was Keon Coleman, and we'll look back on that and be like, shit, I guess maybe we should have known.
Yeah, I think for me, that type of like stat is actually be the sort of the same one as yards per route run. A player I'm probably fading is Ladd McConkey, because he's just not really productive. Like, I don't think he ever came above like a low 20% dominator after 4 years in college. It was like a fourth year breakout, but the NFL seems to like him. He did really well at the combine too, which was something I wasn't entirely expecting. Like, I think in the high 4.3s for him, 4.39, if I remember correctly. Like, so, and he was extremely efficient throughout his career in yards per route run. Another guy who I talked about this with running backs, I don't think it definitely doesn't hold as true with receivers. But if you're telling me every time he's on the field, he's producing a ton of yards relative to any really other player in football on a per route basis, he probably deserved to get more playing time. Why didn't he? It's suspect that he didn't, but then he crushes the combine and he's probably getting good draft capital. Like, you do see him mocked in the first round. I don't think he goes there, but like high second round, he's a player who, like, if I can see someone who I'm not on somewhat easily beating my expectations, it probably would be Ladd.
I think Ladd McConkey probably is the one who beats me, where he ends up being a better professional than Worthy and Mitchell, which like actually is like pretty easy for me to see. Like, it's not like this guy was bad at the combine. In fact, he was clearly a winner of the combine. I mean,
big winner.
And Roman Wilson was too. I think another winner for me is Devontae Walker, who was like brutal at the Senior Bowl, but I'm pretty intrigued by his general profile. And he was huge with Drake May. I mean, he was awesome with Drake May once he got in fact made a difference to the UNC offense once his eligibility got reinstated. And this is me wish casting, but because he's not going to be a first round pick anymore, I am now wish casting Drake May goes to the commies, and then the commies come back around and take Walker with their second round pick. That is what I'm hoping for right now.
I actually thought, because I know you're a Chiefs fan, I thought you were going to say Chiefs. I do think he profiles in that like Alec Pierce MVS level.
Yes,
of like you
totally.
Do one thing, you run fast, you run downfield, and not only are the targets that go to you high value because they produce a lot of yards, maybe touchdowns, but you also take the top off defenses. And he proved he has that speed. And he was also a good contested catch winner in college. And he proved he has that burst with both a really strong 40 and really good burst measures. He didn't test the agility drills, I imagine, because he knew that's not his strong suit. But I think he probably can open his career as like a starting flanker receiver. And I thought the Chiefs like made sense because they're cutting MBS, or probably have already cut MBS. So I actually thought he made sense as that, but also I get where you're going with the connection to Drake May. I do think like he still has work to do to be a less limited player, but if he gets decent draft capital and he's just like a better version of MVS, or he's like what we hoped Gabe Davis would be, hell yeah. Like, I'm totally into that player, especially when I think it'd be relatively underrated because he came off of what is an inefficient, like not dreadfully inefficient, but not his most efficient year at UNC. He was much more efficient in his second year at Kent State, but like, pretty willing to write off that inefficiency as a guy who like didn't know he was playing with the team until like days before whatever his first game was, because he had the weird transfer situation where he wasn't eligible and then was eligible, obviously, and still dominated in terms of overall production at UNC. So I actually like Tez Walker a lot. I think he's like a specific type of player and he needs to land in that role, but like, get him to a team that wants a clear out guy, and hopefully he is more than MVS.
I really wanted MVS to be good too. Yeah. I tend to fall. So for like best ball though, Walker probably like a pretty bad bet right now. Like McConkey and Roman Wilson are probably much better year.
Yeah, Walker
bets.
Strikes me as a guy who like I like him a lot, but you tell me he went in the sixth round, I'm not shocked. Like, I think like I personally in a vacuum would say he's a better prospect than Ladd. I know for sure the NFL doesn't feel that way. I know Ladd's going probably top 50. I can't guarantee Walker even goes like top 120. So yeah, like you said, I'm going to wait for the NFL to sort it out. If I'm taking shots in best ball right now, like I do really want him to get into the top, like even if he just goes high fourth round.
Yeah. Malachi Corley, what do you, I mean, everyone loves this dude. He's getting the Deebo comps. I mean, he's not as big as Deebo. Didn't run at the combine because I think he had a hamstring thing. Are you in, out? Where are you at with Corley?
Yeah, I like Corley. Like you said, I probably never gonna really be another Deebo, but like does have that sort of stylistic comp to him at least, and production to match like an NFL player. I do think though, like talking about so many of these different receivers, and we're talking about him an hour and 10 minutes into the show, like does he even get like draft capital to warrant another guy? Like I think Tez Walker's very good. I don't know how the NFL feels about him. And in such a deep class, if that means he goes in the sixth or seventh round, probably a player, like if you're doing best ball right now, really have to just like sprinkle him in late, sprinkle in some, like one of these guys, talk about like Malachi Corley, Jamari Thrash, Tez Walker. One of these guys is probably going to surprise us and be like end of the third round pick. But right. I don't want to put all of, like, maybe let's say Tez Walker is my favorite. I don't even know if that's true. I don't want to put all of my eggs in his specific basket because I know his odds of being like a meaningfully high draft pick and meaningfully contributing aren't great. It's a big win when that does happen, but his odds are probably aren't any better, or maybe they're worse than like, you know, someone like Thrash. So I do like Corley, but I would just only sprinkle a little bit of him in amongst my favorite rookies, who I'm taking all of these rookies more than like the average drafter at a higher ADP, but I'm just not zeroing in on one of them specifically as far as guys who I don't think are even close to locked into like second round draft capital, or even like fourth round.
I mean, it isn't that one of the funny things about the big board right now is it's very hard to not just log in and take rookies to be like, I'm so excited to do my Drake May stacks. I'm so excited to be drafting Braylon Allen. Like I just, although it did feel good to see, Estime just be absolutely brutal. Cause I've taken none of him. And really, I guess Brock Bowers is the last guy to super cover here. I don't know really where I want him to go. It feels like the Titans kind of are going to pull the trigger on him. Bengals would be the nuts. Bengals at 18 the absolute nuts.
Yeah, I mean, Bowers, my guess is he's probably still the best tight end prospect of the past like 10 to 20 years or whatever. But I do think by showing up at a reasonable weight, it was like low 240, I think 243, if I remember correctly, by showing up at a reasonable weight and not testing, he probably tipped his hand that he's either a like 9+ RAS at 235 pounds or like 8+, still a very good athlete, but not matching up to the Kyle Pitts. Like Kyle Pitts is like thicker Calvin Johnson. He's, you know, he's slower, but he's also a lot, you know, he's still bigger. He's probably not that level of athlete, which is fine. I still think he's probably the best tight end prospect like of our lifetimes, but I do think he probably tipped his hand that he's not the, like, not a 9+, you know, RAS type of athlete. And it would give me a slightest bit of pause on which team takes him, given that he is a little, he's undersized for sure. He overcame it to an insane degree in college, but also his college team knew that and didn't line him up right. As much like in line. He got a lot of slot work and he got like sort of typical wide receiver work. I think most teams, if you take him that high, you have a plan for him. But like, I did say the same thing with Kyle Pitts.
Yeah. I mean, how much of the psychic wound of Kyle Pitts do we all carry? You cannot separate your feelings about Brock Bowers from whatever your feelings were about Kyle Pitts then to Kyle Pitts now, you know. And the crazy thing was, Pitts is like a better athlete than Bowers, right? He's bigger, he's stronger, he's faster.
Bigger, stronger, like, faster. Yeah.
And, you know, Pitts also played in a much less functional college offense too. Like, he played with these idiot coaches who were misusing Damian Pierce, who were playing, although I guess at the time playing Kadarius Toney like 19 snaps a game. Maybe that was GTO. You know, maybe we did learn a lesson about that. And I personally am looking forward to the next generational tight end where I don't have to think about Kyle Pitts anymore. Like maybe 3 years from now, Kyle Pitts is just the backup tight end on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and he runs seven routes a game. And I just don't even have to, like, how, like, the Eric Ebron career trend where, like, Eric Ebron, like, I believe Eric Ebron was the eighth overall pick, like, 19 years ago or something. Not that long ago. But to the point where it just was like, oh, this team made a mistake. We were all wrong, like, whatever. But the fact that the Kyle Pitts question is not resolved, like, we don't actually know if Kyle Pitts is good or not. We really don't. Like,
in my heart, I know. He's good. So, and I think Bowers is going to be, I mean, looking at ADP right now, I think he's undervalued a bit. Like, I don't think there's, like, any reason he should go anywhere close to the group of, like, Njoku, Ingram, like, these kind of guys who I just, like, I know probably aren't difference makers. I guess, like, Evan Ingram, like, nearly set the freaking record for tight end receptions, but also is at, like, a 2-8 in which he's giving you no explosive games. Like, I know what they are, and they're probably low-end tight end ones. Like, I still think Brock Bowers could come in and be a top six fantasy tight end in the NFL, and I'm pretty sure Njoku is grouped out of that. I think he's really good, but I don't think he's ever going to be a top six tight end. I think there's at least a small chance, like, when you get a win, you really get a smash, that Brock Bowers is immediately a top five tight end. I do think, though, when we were talking about, like, oh, does he go to the Chargers a few weeks ago, is probably his distribution is more centered around picks like 12, 13.
Man, I don't want Brock Bowers to play for the Chargers at all. I think the Chargers are going to be such a boring team to watch next year. I
think
not...
they're going tackle with their pick and being boring.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe Alt.
Yep.
One of the tall wide receivers, right? So one of the 6'2", 210 wide receivers is going to be a Charger because they're probably going to cut Mike Williams. And and then one running back, maybe even two running backs, or they get like three of these guys. You know, they sign Rasheen Ali as an undrafted free agent and give him a chance to make the team. That's probably the Chargers' game plan. There we go. You got anyone else you want to discuss before we get out of here?
No, I think you got me. Oh, I guess we could. The only other tight end of note at the combine was Theo Johnson, but like. I know, like, obviously athleticism matters a lot for tight ends. Probably matters more than most other positions. I think the average, like, 150-point season is an 8.4 RAS over the past, like, 13 years. Really strong athleticism, and there are just so few subpar athletes that hit. But also last year, like, nearly all of the tight end ones hit, like, a 23% dominator in college. They were all productive. I think especially it's maybe hard to see because all of the good tight ends go to terrible Big Ten schools. So they get 300 yards, and you're like, that's not very productive. And that's half of Iowa's passing yards for the year. But, like, a lot of the good tight ends were really strong college dominators. Theo Johnson obviously checks the athleticism box, like, 20% final season dominator, very poor yards per route run. Do you have any, like, I'll stash him on some dynasty leagues, but there's no, like, redraft interest for me.
Zero redraft interest. Pat said the best thing about it, which is we definitely want high athleticism score tight ends. Like, 100%, there's a clear correlation between relative athletic score, speed score, like, whatever your composite athleticism measurement of choice is, and fantasy production at tight end. There's absolutely no arguing. But it doesn't have to be sort by athleticism and draft, right? So, like, last year's guy was Zach Kuntz, who I think played, like, six snaps for
sixth or seventh round. Like, the NFL did not value his actual, like, profile of body of work in college. They reacted as such. He went, like, sixth or seventh round to the Jets and did not play at all for the Jets. Yeah.
But Tucker Kraft was, like, I think the fifth most athletic guy and ended up playing a ton for the Packers. Musgrave was pretty high up on there as well. So the guy I am drafting that no one else is Ben Sinnott from K-State.
He had a good combine.
He had a good combine, and you can pretty easily explain his lack of breakout stuff by the fact that he was playing fullback until his final season at K-State. They switched him positions, and then he led the team in receiving. Over Phillip Brooks, who actually is, like, I think a 4-star wide receiver recruit. So I actually am kind of bullish on, like, in kind of like a Noah Gray style way. Obviously, like, no one's rushing to the podium to feel excited about Noah Gray, but if Noah Gray wasn't playing on a team with Travis Kelce, you'd probably get, like, you know, 6.5 targets per game or something. So it would be kind of in a Dalton Schultz style way. That's actually the best way to explain it. So that's all I've got at tight end.
Yeah, that's all I had. It's not the most it's the most exciting tight end class for one player, and it's pretty bland for the rest.
Yeah. All right, guys. Make sure that you are following at Kyle Tweets here, listening to all of the amazing content that they have over there at RotoWorld, and checking. It's almost blurb season. We are incredibly close to free agent blurb season, and we will be back next week.